You know those cravings that hit you out of nowhere? Charred steak tacos, silky mushroom risotto, or a perfect summer salad. When the craving hits, Cookunity delivers. Made with real ingredients and no shortcuts. Get ready to eat meals delivered directly to your door, all tailored to your lifestyle, dietary needs, and cravings. Get what you're craving. Go to cookunity.com/crave or enter crave before checkout for free premium meals for life. That's cookunity.com/crave.
Hello and welcome to episode 55 of the First and Goal podcast. I am Ben Roberts, joined with our special guest tonight from SportsIllustrated.com, Dustin Schutte. Dustin, thank you for joining us this evening as we look ahead to the big weekend matchup between the Purdue Boilermakers and the USC Trojans.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's been a while, but I'm glad to talk to you guys about Purdue football again.
Appreciate you having me back.
Purdue football, but 2-0 Purdue football. Let's emphasize that. Right. As we were talking about off the air, doubled the win total from last year. So the vibes are good in West Lafayette. And we figured it'd be a good time to have you back on. Dustin, we were joking a little bit. I know you threw some extra words in there about how I read your story, which you can read on SI.com, is that Purdue is going to beat USC this weekend. And so we're ready to hear all of your thoughts about the game.
Yeah, I'll clear that up, that I said that they could win. Make sure that it's a C instead of a W there. Yeah, look, when the spread came out, and I actually said this, I threw out some bold predictions early in the season. So I guess you could say I've contradicted myself a little bit, but I did make a bold prediction early before the season started that Purdue would beat USC. And the reason being, there's a couple things working in Purdue's favor. And so if you haven't read this story, I'm basically going to tell you what it is, because it's been out a few days. But first and foremost, USC last season, and not to bring 2024 into this, but USC last season was 1-4 on the road. Their one win was against UCLA. They lost to Washington. They lost to Michigan. They lost to Minnesota, and they lost to Maryland. Now, three of those teams were solid football teams. Maryland was not good last year. So clearly they have some trouble with those travel plans. Now, Lincoln Riley has said this week that they're going to make some adjustments, and they have different, they kind of did some studying and how they're going to travel this week and see if that makes a change. But that's the first thing that popped out there. The second thing is obviously Purdue offensive coordinator Josh Henson was at USC working for Lincoln Riley for three seasons. So he has a good understanding of their personnel, and he has a good understanding of their tendencies and what they like to do. So I'm sure he's working hand in hand with Mike Shear, Purdue's defensive coordinator, this week to kind of let him know what to expect on the offensive side. And then they have a deep understanding of what USC is probably going to try to do defensively. I don't know that this one makes as much of a difference, but all three of Purdue's, Barry Odom, Josh Henson, and Mike Shear have all coached Jaden Maiava. He was at UNLV in 2023. He was at USC 2024. The kid is really talented, can throw the ball all over the field, can run, pick up first downs. So I don't know how much that is. But again, in terms of game planning and his tendencies, I think that really helps. And then the other big thing to me was USC's defense, while it has been aggressive and opportunistic in terms of, I think they lead the Big Ten in sacks and maybe tackles for loss through the first two games, they also gave up some really big plays through the air. They've given up 18 passing plays of 10 yards or more, and three of the touchdowns that they've surrendered have been 20 yards or more. So they can give up the deep ball. And we saw Purdue in week one can hit on those deep passes from Ryan Brown, threw for 311 yards. So I think there's a lot of things that if you're a Purdue fan, you go into this game and you have some optimism. I don't know that the Boilermakers are going to win this game, but I think the 20.5-point spread is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. When I saw that number come out, my jaw kind of dropped, and it's not because Purdue's 2-0 and I think they're going to win. But that just felt like a very heavy number, because I think if you've watched Purdue, they look bad. They look good enough, I think, when you by comparison, especially with the teams that USC has already played, where like Purdue will probably be the best team that they play. So I do believe that offensively they will be able to do some things, and then defensively, I think they will present some challenges that USC hasn't seen against the, you know, with their two other opponents, which of course you can say about Purdue as well. But yeah, 21 and a half, I was like, okay, well, if you're into that type of thing, maybe you take Purdue in the points. Just saying.
Hit right.
That's kind of the most interesting thing when looking and trying to preview this game is I feel like both Purdue and USC are very similar in the fact that we don't really know a lot about them based off of the teams that they've played. USC's played two FCS schools, Purdue one and Ball State. So, you know, it's hard to get a gauge kind of on kind of the strength of the opponents and what's for real and what's not. You know, as fans last year, we fell in love with, you know, the team after their big game against Indiana State, and then we all know what happened. So that to me is kind of very interesting and kind of part of why this spread surprised me as much as well, because while USC has been impressive in those games, those are by far the two easiest games they're going to play all year. And what can you really take from that? But that to me is kind of the most interesting thing is like, what do we honestly really know about these teams? And, you know, it's kind of the most, to me, one of the more exciting things about looking at this game is we're going to find out a lot about both these
Both
teams come Saturday at 3:30.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head, because how many times, and I'd have to go back because I'm not familiar with USC's scheduling under Lincoln Riley, but their win total has decreased each year. And I feel like early in the season, they're kind of like the old version. Now, Notre Dame's really good now, but in like the 2000s to 2010s, there was a period where Notre Dame would be ranked like number 15 every year, and then they'd be 6-6 or 7-5. They would, and it feels like
LSU
that's
was like
kind of
that too.
yeah. I just wonder with USC, what they tend to do is they tend to beat up on these teams. Like they put up big numbers, and look, even last year they went in on week one and beat LSU on a neutral field, and they ended up basically a 500 football team. So I think you're dead on. How much do we really know about this team? Now, we know so far that they have, I think they've got, if I remember right, and I'd have to check the stats on this, I think they have the top running back in the Big Ten, the top receiver in the Big Ten, and the top quarterback in terms of yards per game right now. So obviously, they can score a lot of points, but I think what's interesting, and I think if people just looked at the score last week with Southern Illinois and Purdue, you look at that and you kind of wince at it, you say, ooh, 34-17. That's not the prettiest win. Well, first of all, for a program that won one game last year, you take the wins when you can get them.
Hell
Second of
yes.
all, everybody watching that game, like Purdue made it a priority to run the football, and they were moving the ball 3 or 4 yards almost per carry, and daring Southern Illinois to stop it, and they couldn't. And I think that was purposeful, because I think Purdue, what they want to do in this game, I think they know that USC's defense can spring leaks in the secondary. And what I think Purdue and Barry Odom and Josh Henson want to do is get a good push and get some confidence on that offensive line, run the ball with Devin Mockabee, and then try to pick USC apart in the passing game. Since day one, Barry Odom's come in and said, basically, we want to establish the run. We want to have good offensive line play, but we still want to be able to throw the football and move it around. So that's going to be, to me, that's the most interesting thing. Like, can Purdue's offense take advantage of the USC defense? And if they can establish and win the line of scrimmage on the offensive side, get ready for a shootout, because we may see like a, I think in my one of my predictions I had 37-31, but it could be
Yeah.
even higher than that.
Right.
I legitimately think we could see a lot of points in this game.
Yeah.
Well, and just talking about the offense through a couple weeks, Dustin, kind of curious your thoughts because Tim and I have talked, and you know, maybe it's just nice that we have kind of a competent staff this year, but I've been really impressed through 2 weeks with Josh Henson and his play calling. And I've joked, I was like, you can kind of tell when an OC is really kind of locked in. You don't see a lot of complaints on Twitter and things like that about the play calling. And you know, I think through 2 weeks, you know, he's really mixed it up well, dialed up some big plays. They've ran the ball when they've had to. Like, I've been thoroughly impressed with Coach Henson and the staff in general, but just kind of how he has called games early on this year.
Yeah, I don't have an eidetic memory, so I don't know. I'd have to go back and watch basically. But I think one of the biggest things to that point, Ben, is the fact that Purdue doesn't seem to have a lot of negative plays, number one. And then it seems like they're very purpose, like if they get in a third down situation, those guys are going to the sticks. Right. Like they're trying to pick up first downs where I feel like there have been years, and this wasn't just a Ryan Walters thing. This was a thing under Danny Hope when Gary Nord was running the offense. Like it just felt like they would try to get the ball in space and hope that the wide receivers could block and that the guy could pick up 7 or 8 yards. And that just doesn't work. So it feels more purposeful where Josh Henson is saying, let's get the ball into the hands of our playmakers 6 or 7 yards down the field if we need to pick up 5 or 6 yards. So I feel like to that now, could that change because the competition level is getting a lot better this coming week? It certainly could. We could see a lot of complaints on Twitter about his play calling, but I think you're right. I think there's been almost like a purpose or a reasoning behind his play calling all through the first two games. And I think it's just such a refreshing thing for people that had to deal with watching a Graham Harrell offense the last 2 years.
Air raid offense.
Yeah, man.
No,
That was some rough
I
stuff.
agree. I agree. I think that, like, and that's why, like, Ben and I have talked about it after the first two games about how it's just looked there's looked like a rhyme and reason. It's looked like there's been more of, like, it's made sense of what you've seen offensively. And I agree with you too that last week it very much so looked like they made a concerted effort to run the ball. Like, hey, we need to be able to control the line of scrimmage, to be able to control the ball, because Southern Illinois had those two first drives where they, they got big plays and they marched down the field, and we kind of more methodically moved down, with a nice balance of run and pass. And I think that's because they know, in the grand scheme of things, that's the way you're going to have to be able to get it done, is we can control the line. Because control the line of scrimmage, be able to run the ball, but also have a nice balance of, hey, when we need to throw, we need to throw. But also not wanting to be in situations where you're, third and 10, and then you're an obvious passing down. If you can control the line of scrimmage, be able to get 3 or 4 yards per rush, now all of a sudden you're in third and manageable. And then, we're hoping guys are running to the sticks and then getting the ball. And if someone misses a tackle, then it becomes a bigger play.
Well, and I think, to that point, and I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth here because I just said we could see a really high scoring game. And I do think that's a real possibility. But the other thing that I was thinking about when I was watching that game against Southern Illinois is if you can control the clock and keep that USC offense, that's clearly their most lethal weapon. So try to limit their number of possessions. So I think, and in the, as you mentioned, in the long run, who are the offensive teams that Purdue's going to have to play this season, right? Like they're going to have to play USC. They're going to have to play Notre Dame. They're going to play Ohio State and Indiana. And if you want to throw Illinois into that mix, you can. So they're going to have some challenges where I think Barry Odom probably looks at this schedule, looks at the offensive efficiencies of some of the teams that they play and say, hey, we've got to learn to control the football. And the first time you don't, I think kind of in that first game, you're just hoping the play calls work more than trying to establish something. And then in that second game, you were like, okay, we can get a good push up front. We're going to win the game. Now let's see if we can control the clock, which they were able to do, because you don't want to have that experiment in week three against USC because it's probably going to fail.
Yeah, that shouldn't be the first time
Yeah,
you're
and I think
rolling
it's
out trying to get that established.
right.
I think you bring up a really good point about the negative plays too. I feel like it, and I hate to just keep bringing on last year, but like just to compare the two, there were just so many times last year where Purdue would have drives and they would just have self-inflicted wounds, whether it's holding penalties or drop snaps or negative plays because you call a screenplay for the 15th time in the game. Just a lot of different things that so far, and they have really done a really good job of making sure to eliminate those. So I think that's a really good point to kind of highlight. Is it, you know, that just helps so much when you're in, you know, I can't even really remember a time where they like had a legit third and long so far this year. Like it just seems like they've always been, you know, third and eight or third and nine at worst. So yeah, I think that's a really good point. Like those, and it feels like those holding calls last year specifically just came at the absolute worst times every game.
Yeah, no,
Which,
I think they're the least penalized team in the Big Ten right now.
yeah,
So
correct.
like
And they
staying
not
on
have a,
schedule.
they didn't have an
Right.
offensive penalty. Was it last week or week one? One of them.
I think
I don't.
last week well, it might have been last week, because last week they like didn't go they didn't I don't think Purdue got a
They
penalty
didn't
until
punt last week.
there was right, but I think there was one drive where they got consecutive personal fouls, but that was on defense. And but I
Yeah.
think those might have been the first two maybe called and even ex but for sure accepted penalties that they had of the entire game. And that was, I believe that was in the fourth. And I was like, oh, okay, like yeah, we didn't see this last year. Like you said, you would see, you know, one positive play for a couple yards, or and if something was going well, then you'd see a hold. And so now that good play gets wiped away and you're behind the sticks. Now you're looking at, you know, second and 17. And then it was like you said, probably running a screen pass. Doesn't get anywhere. Now it's third and forever. And it just was like, yeah, it would just be a snowball effect going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, they've been really disciplined. Fewest penalties in the Big Ten. And what's funny, and I'll also apologize because I don't want to bring up 2024, but even when you watch that Indiana State game when they won 49 to nothing and all the penalties they had, like it could have been much, much worse. And I think that that was maybe the first sign of a red flag. But the way I viewed it at the time was, oh, well, they won 49 to nothing and they still looked pretty ugly. So as the season gets going, you know, they'll probably
Cleaned
clean
up.
that up. It got worse. But I think if you're Purdue now, to eliminate those penalties and they only have one turnover, and look, if you're going to have a turnover, in my opinion, make it when you're taking a risk down the field. It was a deep route that he underthrew. Like it wasn't a bad decision. He just underthrew the football. So
A bad throw.
I think Purdue is doing a really good job of putting their players in position to make plays and then not putting Ryan Brown in a situation where he has to make a bad decision or a quick decision or something he's uncomfortable with. So, and I think that's going to be a big key. I would guess there's probably going to be a few more penalties in this game. Purdue may have a turnover or two, but I think they're going to take some chances in this game. And I think if you're a
They
Purdue
have
fan
to.
and after
They
last
have to,
year,
though.
if you throw an interception or two on a deep ball, I think fans are going to live with that. You don't want to get conservative and just have your first big opportunity, you get beat 31 to 14 because you
You
don't
didn't really
take
try
any
to push
chances down the
anything.
field. Yeah,
Yeah,
right.
exactly.
Well, and
Yeah.
with that interception, we talked about it on our recap one last week. It kind of felt like that kind of got Ryan Brown going almost. And like to his credit, after he threw it, and to your point, like it was just a bad ball, like that's just gonna happen. He didn't hang his hat. He didn't let it lead to more negative plays. It was just like, all right, I screwed up, let's move on. And he really played well the rest of the game. So, to me, watching him, that was the most encouraging thing from that game was how he bounced back after that interception.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have big numbers, but he played a really sound football game.
Yeah.
And that was the same thing. I mean, he put up big numbers in week one, but he was very, 18 to 26, couple touchdowns. I think it's a really good thing for both parties that he transferred back from North Carolina because that would have been a disaster on both ends. And
North Carolina looked like the team we all watched last year.
yes,
That's
I
what
was
they
thinking
looked
that
like.
exact
Yeah,
same thing.
that's what I was in some of group chats, and I was like, that this North Carolina team looks they look familiar. I've seen this brand of football before. Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I guess my thought about Ryan Brown's performance last week was that it wasn't maybe as spectacular as it was week one, but it still fell under that category of winning football. And I remember that's what Barry Odom said when he announced Brown as the starters. He was like, he felt like the entire quarterback room, but obviously talking about Ryan Brown in particular, but he was like, he can play winning football. And winning football, I think, in their eyes, is not necessarily a guy going out and throwing for 300 yards and four touchdowns. It's not that. It's just managing the game well. Yes, if you take a shot, you make a mistake, short-term memory, let's wipe it out, and you know we can recover from it. You know you can play well despite making a mistake here or there. So yeah, I was what like Ryan Brown's performance last week, even though like the numbers might not have been as eye popping, it to me it was still like an encouraging sign of like, yep, nope, he's still capable of playing good football. Because just like Ben said, like after he threw that pick, he locked back in and was still able to, you know, to move the offense along and make the throws that he needed to make. He used his feet. They said he was out on that touchdown run.
I think he was in. Yeah, I think
he was in. I saw when they showed it, was the irony of it. Like we talked about this in the recap, like when the ref was coming back on and he said after review, as he was saying, like the runner stepped out the 2 yard line in the stadium. They had it up on the Jumbotron and they like zoomed in and they played it real quick and then froze it and then ran it back. And then like you could see where his foot touched. You could see green. And I'm like, everyone in the stadium is like, what do you mean? Like,
right.
Look right over there. We can all see it. But yeah, he's played really well these couple of weeks. And like you said, if he takes some chance, he takes more chances down the field this Saturday. And if one of them happens to get picked off, I'm not going to be overly upset about that. Cause I don't think a conservative brand of football will beat the USC's, you know, the Michigans, the Ohio States. Like as you go through the season, a conservative brand of football will just, it just won't get that done.
Right. I agree. And, yeah, I mean, you said everything really well, and I think the other thing was just the composure for Southern Illinois to come out and score on their first two possessions. I think there could have been some panic there for the offense, but they just dialed in and were like, all right, we got to go do our job. And then they answered immediately, and that's a really positive sign, even if it's against Southern Illinois.
Right, yeah. That was really impressive. The sure ability to come back out and just be like, all right, that's cool, but we got to do ours. And then you answer and give that. And I felt like that was an extension of complimentary football of like, all right, defense, like we believe you're going to figure it out. But in the meantime, like we're going to try to hold water here until you guys can kind of cut off their water and then we can get going.
I don't, it sounds like I got both you guys drinking the Kool-Aid for an upset this weekend, but we'll do a predictions here in a little bit. But Dustin, I want to get your thoughts on the defense, because we Sam and I have talked about this, and you know, I feel like it's kind of nitpicky because of how well the defense has played. You know, if you look, 7 of the 8 quarters they've given up a total of 3 points. They just completely cut off Southern Illinois' water in the second half. But to me, it just almost seems like there's something missing a little bit there. I don't, you know, we've talked about how the lack of turnovers is concerning for me. I know they made some big plays when they needed to. You know, you look at Smiley on the fourth down stop, and Nunley had a couple big sacks, but I'm just kind of waiting for like almost like a moment where it's like, okay, this defense like is matching the production, but then at the same point I'm like, man, they're balling out. Like it just feels kind of nitpicky, but it's almost like you're waiting for some big plays to kind of open up almost. Is that fair?
I think that's a fair criticism. They haven't forced a turnover through two games. So I think some people are probably like, you know, what's going on? We've played Ball State. We played Southern Illinois. I don't have enough research, nor do I want to take the time to do this study. But I have a theory behind this no turnovers, but the defense playing really well. It seems to me, and again, you'd have to watch so much film and go through different teams, and I just don't have the patience. But sometimes it seems like teams that emphasize getting turnovers struggle with tackling, and the other, like they're almost trying to hit the ball out instead of wrap guys up and tackle them. I remember this, and this is not a shot at Indiana, but Tom Allen's defense, the first year he was there, was really good because they forced like 19 turnovers. Their defense could not tackle. They were really good at forcing turnovers and making big plays. So, and the reason I bring that up is because Barry Odom and Mike Shear have both emphasized tackling. They said after the Ball State game, basically, you know what, we were sloppy. Our tackling was average at best. We have to get better. And it was nothing major. It was the fact that instead of taking the extra step or two, they were diving or they were lunging and they didn't have good form. So I actually think it's better to be in a situation where you're making those play, where you're tackling instead of necessarily getting turnovers. Now, I think you have to have a balance. You're not going to go through a whole season with four or five turnovers and win a ton of games. So you have to have some level of balance there, but I'm actually wouldn't hit the panic button just yet, because I think the heavier emphasis right now is let's make sure we're tackling properly. And I think probably some of it is because you just don't tackle anymore in practice. So you can't really, you can teach the form through some of those drills and the tackling wheels or whatever those things are called. So you can teach that, but it's different than hitting an actual player. And right. So I don't have any studies to back that up, but it seems like a lot of times teams that create a lot of turnovers have trouble tackling. And I think that getting guys to the ground and tackling, getting into the backfield, getting sacks, getting tackles for loss. Purdue has 7 sacks and 14 tackles for loss. If they can keep that up at that level of pace, that's going to be top half of the Big Ten by the end of the season. So, I think you can say it's nitpicky. I think Purdue's going to have to force some turnovers, especially in some of these bigger games. But I wouldn't hit the panic button on that front just yet.
Yeah, no, that, I agree. I think you do see that a lot with the teams who cause a lot of turnovers. You'll see times where it's obvious there, like you said, you'll see like corners and whatnot, where instead of wrapping a guy up, they have one arm and they're trying to punch the ball out. But meanwhile, the guy will slip out. And it's like, no, the first guy, you got to get there, wrap him up. And then if someone else wants to come in and try to punch the ball out, that's fine. And that's why, like, when Ben and I were talking about it, we kept saying like it's nitpicky, because like it's more of a statistic that like it's almost like greedy, because yeah, they've given up 3 scoring drives over 2 games, and you know, Ben was saying they cut off their water for the second half against Southern Illinois. I mean, it was essentially after the second drive of the game on nothing, and it's like how can you possibly be mad with the defense who does what they did after those first 2 drives and be like, oh, well, they didn't get any turnovers. And it's just, but I think it's more of us thinking like you said, you can't get by with that forever in terms of like for some of these teams you're going to play, like you will need to generate a turnover or two. Like if you do have a game where your defense is, where your offense is struggling, it's like, hey, as you're trying to get stops, but also if you can generate a turnover, maybe give your offense a short field to where then they can kind of get something going. That's kind of where, again, and it's nitpicky, because it's like, hey, if they're keeping people out the end zone, that at the end of the day, that's probably what matters. But yeah, it's also kind of like, hey, what about that situation where you kind of need your defense to kind of give you a spark and kind of, you know, again, complimentary football type piece?
I think you would rather be in this situation, because if you're asking yourself, okay, if you're in a situation where you've created, let's say, 5 turnovers through the first 2 games, your question then going into this USC game is, okay, what can our defense do if they don't create a turnover?
That's true.
Right? How good is our defense if they can't create a turnover? You know what Purdue's defense can do if they can't create a turnover. So right. Now the question is, how good can they be if they do force a couple turnovers?
Right.
So I think they're in a better spot. And again, 2 games, Ball State and Southern Illinois, we're probably overthinking it. We don't know a lot about, but I just think you'd rather be in this situation, because how many times do you look at a team and say, man, you know, they've got 4 interceptions, and then they'll play a Michigan or an Ohio State. They don't get those turnovers and they lose by 30 points.
Sure. That's great. That's a great point.
And, you know, just to kind of just highlight the defense, because I think they have played really, really well. And just kind of want to get your thoughts, Dustin, because you've been around the team obviously more than us. You know, there were so many just unknowns coming into the year, just with the roster turnover and, you know, you lost arguably the best defender in the Big Ten. You obviously lost your best, like, edge rusher as well. So there was a lot of question marks in there. And then we bring in all of these new guys, and you know, we've talked about some and you've written about guys. Is there anybody through 2 weeks that have kind of surprised you a little bit? For me, and it's probably not fair because he, you know, just looking at some of his stats and things like that, he was really good at UNLV, but that was a linebacker, Correa, to me, has really been, I mean, he's just all over the field, man. He just makes plays. And, you know, I feel like he was maybe a little overshadowed by Manny Powell and kind of some of the preseason recognition that Manny got. But is there anybody on the defensive side that has kind of stood out as a surprise?
Yeah, I think Charles Correa is one of those guys for sure. Excuse me. Because especially in that Southern Illinois game, he made some big plays at some critical times. So I think that he certainly deserves a shout out. A guy I think that has been kind of probably not to people covering Purdue, but just, and I don't even want to say nationally, but like to fans, I think one guy who has been a surprise has been Taj Rael. Now that's a kid who's played a lot of football, but he has, I think he's leading the team in tackles. I think he's got maybe 10 to 12, something. I don't know the stats off the top of my head, but he's been really effective in those games. And so I think that he's a player who has been effective, but hasn't necessarily, you know, made the big play or been a guy who's had the big hit, but he's just been effective. He's done a good job. He's kind of shut down receivers. I think that those two guys to me are the two guys that have stood out the most through these first couple games, but I'm interested to see if somebody else, you know, steps up, makes a big play here this weekend against USC for sure.
Yeah. Taj Rael for sure. I feel like every time you would see a replay, like, you know, we're watching a play and then you see a replay, I see him there. Like his in terms of him rallying to the football, that was the first thing that you know, Ben and I talked about this after the Ball State game. But one of the things that we were impressed with the defense was just the way guys were just rallying to the ball. Like someone can get like, okay, they, you know, they pass it out wide and it's like, oh, all of a sudden you see three or four jerseys just bam, right over there. And I feel like I keep seeing him in everything. So to be all over the field like that, that's who actually stuck out in my mind as well. So I'm glad you pointed him out. Cause yeah, he's been really solid. And I like how every game we're starting to see another guy step up and like you said, like now you want to continue to see that who's going to be next to kind of, cause with Charles Correa, I feel like the game has kind of slowed down for him to where like he's kind of seeing things and being able to read. And that's why he's been able to make some of these bigger plays.
Well, and not only that, but, you know, he's played in, he didn't play a ton last season, but he knows Mike Shearer's defense. He knows what they want. And I think that that's such an advantage. And I know they brought in a couple guys from UNLV, but I think that really helps him in coming in. He's not having to learn a new playbook. He's not having to learn a new defense. So I think that gives him a one up. And I don't know. Guys, I was kind of on the road for that Ball State game, so I didn't have laser focus for that game. So I don't know how he played in that one, but I can tell you the Southern Illinois game, he was all over the field.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Yeah, no, he was all over the place. And I'm looking at the stats right now, and you're right. Taj Rael has the most tackles. He's at 14, and then Charles Correa is at 9. So him and then Manny Powell at 9. So again, the three guys who you kind of expected, especially with Manny Powell, they're the ones who are like, yeah, they're the ones who stepped up as of now. And there's been a handful of other guys who are at 6. I mean, like I said, the thing that for me that's been most impressive with the defense has just been, it seems as though everyone knows their assignment. And I remember listening to a press conference that Odom did. I think it was the week of the Ball State game. And he talks about how, in terms of the preparation, they want, and the coaches, they have a meeting and they want every player, starter, second string, everyone has to know the responsibility. Everyone knows what's expected of them. And I think that's kind of what they talk about situational football, but just everyone kind of knowing, hey, this is what your job is. This is what you have to lock in on. And it feels very like Patriots adjacent of like the whole like do your job thing. But to watch it kind of playing out where you're not seeing some of the same issues we've seen with other Purdue team iterations of Purdue football, it's really refreshing. And obviously the tests get tougher now, but just through these first 2 weeks, aesthetically, it's really looked good in terms of the way guys have been rallying to the ball, which again, I think would go back to your point of you would rather be in this position when we're talking about the turnovers of like, hey, but you have a defense that's doing well without them. So what happens if they do start turning, start forcing turnovers?
Well, and to your guys' point too, Sim, I know you said Taj Royale have 14 tackles. All of them are solo tackles, which obviously is kind of important to highlight for a DB who's kind of, going to have a lot of one-on-one opportunities out there. And that's third in the Big Ten and eighth nationally right now. So, good call out there as a guy who's really played well. And if I remember right, he came with a DB coach from Memphis. So he has some f familiarity there. But yeah, he has been really impressive as well. One last thing I want to kind of touch on before we kind of look for the predictions, and I don't think it's well, I think it's intentional that Coach Odom this week has specifically gone out to praise the student section. But just kind of the crowd in general, I feel like is going to be just a massive part of this game. I think Purdue is really going to need that home crowd environment. And you're going to have the 2000 Rose Bowl team back, so there's going to be all the nostalgia there. But and the crowds so far have been great. Like, this not like a knock on that, but it just seems like it's going to be kind of another level this week for this game.
Yeah, I think for sure. Like, look, to me, Purdue fans have been really loyal. There are a lot of fan bases, and we saw this during the Danny Hope era. We saw it during the Darrell Hazel era. I don't know that we really saw it during the Ryan Walters era, but there were a lot of times when, if you're coming off a 1-11 season and you don't know anybody on the team, like, it's you could be half full. A lot of programs probably are half full, especially when you're playing Ball State or Southern Illinois. So I give Purdue fans a lot of credit. Now, I do expect that it's going to be a packed house. It's going to probably look similar to the Notre Dame game last year when everybody was amped up. Coming off that 49-0 win, people were already talking college football playoff, before the travesty unfolded. I think fans are going to be really excited and really amped up for that game. And I do think win or lose, they're going to be encouraged by the product they see on the field on Saturday. And I think that that's going to continue to bring them back. Look, I think that to me, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. Gosh, 37 now. So I've been around Purdue sports a long time. In terms of, and this is not just a Purdue football thing, football, volleyball, men's basketball, even women's basketball had some really good crowds considering the struggles they had last year. I don't know if there's ever been more momentum around Purdue sports in every athletic capacity as there has been these last 2 or 3 years. And I know men's basketball has a lot to do with that success you want to be part of. But to me, to have 54,000 people there on day one when you're playing Ball State and you're coming off a 1-11 record and you have 82 new players on the roster and the only guy you really recognize is Devin Mockabee. That says something about your loyalty. And the same thing to have, I don't remember what the announced crowd was. It was 50 plus thousand again on Saturday. To have that level of loyalty for a 7:30 kickoff against Southern Illinois. Like, there's a lot of people that are like, well, I'm not driving the 3 hours to go there and get home at 3 in the morning, Yeah, I think it's going to be on a completely different level. It's a big time opponent. It's on prime time. You're honoring the 2000 Rose Bowl team. Drew Brees had his first career start against USC in 1998. Like, there's a lot of reasons to be excited about this weekend if you're a Purdue fan. And like I said, I think that there's going to be a really good product. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's some, I'm not going to say Jeff Brohm level trick plays, but I think that Barry Odom and Josh Henson have probably saved a few things for this game in particular.
Yeah. No, I personally think that this game will have I'd like to say that there's nothing like a night game at Ross 8. I feel like it's gonna have night game energy for a 3:30 kick. Like you said, with the 2000 team coming back, all of the warm and fuzzies that come with that, the fact that the product on the field has actually been good. And like you said, even when it wasn't, you're still seeing people showing up because of that hope of that, just like, hey, maybe it's going to turn around, this week kind of thing. And yeah, I mean, like USC as a brand and in terms of an opponent, that's going to bring people out as well. So yeah, I think that it's going to be like electric, at least at the start of the game. And I know last week, we were talking about this off air. Last week, I made sure I got in the building. I got in the stadium 25 minutes before kick, because the week before it was a madhouse trying to get in, and so I was like, I adjusted. I made my own adjustments. Went back and look at the film, and we make adjustments to be better over here. But yeah, it was. I'm excited. I'm really excited. And like you said, I think win or lose, I still think I'm gonna walk out of there being like, yeah, okay, like this is it's fine. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Now I hope that they're winning, because then we'll probably do an emergency podcast and it's like, yeah, so college football playoff, where we at, blah blah blah. But
Absolutely. Why
yeah, I
would you
think it,
not? Yeah.
yeah, right, exactly. At that point, I mean, might as well just write us in there already. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for it. I think it's gonna be a good atmosphere, and I think Purdue's gonna hold their own. I genuinely do.
I'm sorry, I don't want to cut off Ben here, but I have to ask this question, and it may come off as rude, so I apologize. Because you guys look younger than I am, were you around for the Rose Bowl team? Did you guys experience that season?
I was actually in the crowd. Probably the favorite, my favorite football memory. I was at the game, the Ohio State game, when Breeze hit Morales, the Holy Toledo
Nice.
play. So, yeah, I was young at the time, born in 87. But that game, like, to me, was so much fun, because I don't, not to go too far down memory lane, but Breeze throws the pick right before that, and Ohio State scores, and everybody's like, oh shit. And then I'm fairly confident it's the very next play after they score, after that pick, and Breeze hits it, and yep.
Nice.
Yeah,
Okay.
I wasn't, I'll be honest, I wasn't a Purdue fan at the time. I
Okay.
was born in 88, but I mean, it wasn't like I was rooting for the team down south. Let's be very clear about that. But yeah, I was actually watching some tape on the 2000 team this past year, and I didn't realize that they had a, I think it was that the year they was it Wisconsin who they beat in overtime, blocked a field goal with
Block field
Ian
goal. Yep.
Carter. I didn't so I've seen that highlight before. I, for whatever reason, never realized it was an overtime. It was a walk-off, like
Yeah.
Madison, like that. I know for myself, I
Is
like
that the
talking shit.
last time they beat
I would,
Wisconsin?
it might actually be, yeah. Yeah,
I'm thinking it's the
every
last
other
time.
time since then, it has been belt ass, and not in a good
Yeah.
way. But yeah, I just like,
Okay.
yeah. So I'm aware of that 2000 team, because they went to Rose Bowl
Okay.
and played Washington. Washington had Marcus Tuiasosopo.
So we're all about the same age then. So that's okay. You guys look, whatever your skincare plan is, keep it up. But I'll tell you. So we had season tickets that year. I was not at the Ohio State game. I did go to the Indiana game when they clinched. But the best memory I have from that season is we were sitting in the, God dang it, the north end zone. I think it was the north end zone for the Michigan game. And at halftime, Purdue's down 28 to 10. And I remember this guy standing up furious. And he's kind of marching up the stairs. And his buddy goes, "We got Drew Brees. Where are you going?" And he's like, "Being down 28 to 10 to Michigan at halftime is like being down 50 to Duke in basketball at halftime. We're not winning this game." He stormed out, never came back. And that was one of the greatest comebacks in Purdue football history.
Bro's probably a
Yeah, that
Falcons.
was. I wonder what that guy's doing right now.
Yeah, probably a Falcons fan. They probably said the same thing in the Super Bowl. Very clear. Yeah,
No, but
that'd be salty. Ooh.
real quick before we go in, I did want to just hit you guys with this trivia question. I stumbled across this and I thought it was really interesting. So, with the 2000 team back, and Dustin can probably answer this a little better than Sim, but Sim, you never know. Although this year, when I hit you with trivia qu qu questions. Your track record has not been good. You've been on 2004 Purdue football or 2024 football-esque, but I'll give you a chance to redeem yourself here. So on the 2000 team, there was seven guys on that team who are Super Bowl champions from the NFL. Can you guys name the seven from the 2000 team? There's a couple layups here, guys. Come on.
Yeah, there's
Breeze, moving up,
well,
probably.
do you want to go first, Sim?
I'm gonna say Breeze. I'm getting out the way. Take care of that.
Breeze is one. There's another super easy layup.
Roosevelt Colvin is on
That's what
is
I
one
was
of
gonna say.
those.
Yes, the Roosevelt Colvin. Yeah.
Roosevelt Colvin is not on. Was not on the 2000 team.
He wasn't? Oh man.
And I will preface this is from PurdueSports.com. So this this is from the game note. So this is
No, that's
officially
probably okay. I have a different
is
memory of when Roosevelt Colvin played then.
there
Oh
is
man.
a New England Patriot that I feel like y'all are missing that's super easy.
Yeah, I know there's somebody.
There's actually a
Golly.
couple New England offensive linemen.
Matt White. No.
I'm not sure how to make it any more easier than that.
Offensive lineman. Yeah, see, this is the problem is I don't remember offensive lineman very well. I
Not
don't think
heavy, but
I said light. I said Matt
you said
Light.
Matt Light.
I'm
Yeah.
saying Matt
Did I'm
Light.
sorry.
I'm
Yep.
sorry. I missed that. There was
This
also.
is stuff I'm
So
talking
those were
about,
the
man.
two
I'm gonna
layups.
can I get at least a position? Because I'm not clearly don't remember. What are the other positions?
There is a wide receiver.
A wide receiver.
For the
Vinny
time, he had the
Sutherland wasn't on
most.
a team when they won one, no.
Stanford?
For a short amount of time, he had the most receptions in NCAA history.
Taylor Stubblefield?
Before him,
Stanford?
Stanford is number
Right.
three.
And then
There's
Sean
a couple
Phillips.
more linemen.
Sean Phillips? Was
Sean
he?
Phillips is not.
He made the league, didn't he?
People are going to stop reading my content.
What about a
I
linebacker?
got nothing.
A linebacker.
Double G.
Gilbert Gardner.
Gilbert Gardner. And then so we're at four. We got three left. These are tough. I'm not gonna lie. There's another G. His son is playing college football. I can't remember where off the top of my head, right? I believe.
Yeah, that doesn't do anything for me.
Let me see here. I'm trying to think of the offensive lineman. Matt Turner was not on that team, I don't think.
When
Google
I
team.
say all three names, y'all are going to be
Wait.
really pissed.
Gosh darn it. Was Matt
There
Mitrione one?
no, you're in the right
Golly.
ballpark.
Was there anyone else on defense?
Yes, at least for sure one. I believe this other guy was a defender as well, but now I'm questioning. There is for sure one more offensive lineman. Funky
Stu
spelling
Swiger,
last name.
Stu Swiger never won a Super Bowl, did
I
he?
believe he played, I believe he won it with New England. Played with Matt Light, I'm pretty sure, at New England as well. I remember hearing stories about the two of them.
I don't know. I don't know that one.
Gene Murkowski.
I was not on.
I no, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't have
I was
gotten
never
that
gonna
one
get that
either.
one. Sorry, Gene. Sorry, Gene. In case you're listening, I'm sorry. It's not personal.
And the other two are defensive players?
Yes.
Linebackers?
Lineman, I believe. Now you
Lineman.
remember, I was a kid in 2000, so
Yeah.
Chucky
Until like last
Okobe
year.
and Brandon
Oh.
Gorham.
I should have known Chucky. I did not know.
Yeah.
Well,
I
fun
can't
trip
believe.
down
I
memory
cannot
lane.
believe. Man. I have
What were
a
the same?
different memory of when Roosevelt Colvin played for Purdue.
I totally thought he was on that team. My Rosie, you listen
If you would have
well. It's
said,
nothing personal.
if you would have said, name one defensive player on Purdue's Rose Bowl team. I would have bet my house that Roosevelt Colvin was on that team. Man, yeah. Don't I'm again, I was also a child back then, so please keep reading my content. I actually follow the team and do better stuff now. I just got a foggy memory, apparently.
Don't let this sway you, America. Still tapping the Dustin content.
No, but that was I thought that was kind of interesting. Having guys, and I'm trying to think of what team Stanford was on, because I remember him being on the Lions, but I don't remember him.
Yeah,
we're not sure what team he won it on, but I just thought that would be fun. I didn't think y'all would be that bad at it, but no, I'm joking. I would have been in the same boat.
It's real easy on your side.
Pardon me, because I'm looking at the seven, but either way, it'll be real fun to see all those guys back, and you know, it'll just help with that crowd. So let's look ahead. I know you have your pick, Dustin, and you're free to change it if you want here, or you can go with that one. Shocker alert, the guy who drinks the most Kool-Aid is going to go with an upset. I think we're going to see another big Maccabee game. And I think that Ryan Brown is going to hit a couple big plays. I think be cool. I know you talked about all the different connections with the staff in USC, but one guy is Michael Jackson, who played his first few years at USC.
Yep.
So I'm going to say he gets a touchdown, big game from Maccabee, and I think Purdue wins 38-35.
You might be on the field if that happens, man. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Oh boy,
we'll save that for later.
We'll save that for later. Myself, I'm kind of the opposite of Ben here. I'm usually pretty pessimistic, and that's kind of how this is gonna be. Now, as I said at the top, I do not think it's gonna be some beatdown. I said earlier, if you're into that type of thing, I would take Purdue in the points. And that's how my score is going to reflect. I think it's going to be 30-24 USC. And I do think it's a game that, like, in the fourth, like, USC is going to have to put Purdue away. Like, they're going to have to, like, it's not going to be some, they're dominating us, and then all of a sudden, you know, we get a couple late touchdowns that make the score look better than what it is. I think that defensively, we will be able to slow them down. I do think this is a game where we do generate a few turnovers. However, I think that at the end of the day, they might be able to make a few more plays offensively than Purdue's able to make. And thus, yeah, it's 30-24. But again, as I say every time when I do a prediction and Purdue's not picked to win, Purdue, you're free to prove me wrong. Always free to prove me wrong.
Yeah, I'll stick with my pick, 37-31. I would not be surprised by 37-31 USC. I would not be surprised with the Purdue victory. This is in my head what I'm kind of picturing will happen. I think Purdue is going to have a fourth quarter lead in that game. And then I'm envisioning like a first game Jeff Brohm versus Louisville 2017 sort of situation where USC just has the best players on the field. And, you know, in that 2017 game, Lamar Jackson was the best player. I think Jaden Maiva is probably the best player. And I think, as Sim said, they just make one too many plays. They score a late touchdown to take a lead. Right. And then Purdue's offense just, I don't want to say panics, but can't make the necessary make the
drive
play
to respond. Yeah.
Right. And yeah. So, but I think that that's kind of the type of game. I think it's going to be a very back and forth type game. I could be completely wrong on this, but that's just kind of the gut feeling I have is Purdue's going to have that late lead. USC is going to put together a drive, and then Purdue just maybe can't quite respond late in the game.
My nerves just kicked up at the thought.
We'll say that happens.
Or having the ball, like, with the opportunity to drive,
yeah,
win. Like, I
will need a lot more play hards if that does happen.
I had.
I'll be at a liquor store right afterwards buying at least four packs.
During that Alamo Bowl game against Kansas State, I had a cousin who was like leaning over the table and just saying, don't even get to the 50 if we're not going to score. Like, don't give me any hope if we're not going to score. So he's like fighting this inner demon of like, I want us to win, but don't even get, like, don't give me hope unless we're going
right.
to win.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't dangle the carrot out in front of me if I can't have it. Don't do it. Don't do it.
That's fair. Well, that game again, a 3:30 kickoff on CBS. Did also just kind of want to highlight Gary Danielson will be back on the call. His last year doing broadcasts on CBS, so neat that he gets to be back in West Lafayette and do this one, and hopefully he can go out with a victory there. Before we wrap everything up, did just want to touch real quick with the volleyball team as well. We talked a little bit about it on the last pod with their impressive kind of bounce back wins to go 2-1 last weekend. And then they went on a short road trip to Hinkle where they swept Butler. But Dustin, kind of your initial thoughts, you know, what are we, five matches in there? You know, they've had some tests early, and I think for the most part, they've answered them about as well as you can expect here in this first, you know, few weeks.
Yeah, so I've been able to cover a couple of those matches and just a few observations. Number one, the longer you give Dave Shondell a chance to scout a team, the better the Boilermakers perform. I think that was evident in that game against Kansas. They knew just about everything. And he told me after that Kansas match, you know, when I asked him about the loss to Georgia Tech, he was like, you know, I think we thought we could win, but we didn't play like we could win. And he told him basically, we can't play afraid. We got to go out and play like we know we can win these matches. And they did that against Bowling Green in Kansas. Kenna Woolard has been really good. She's probably the best power hitter that they have on that team. Grace Heaney is up in that category, but she can be a little bit erratic at times. Ryan McAleer deserves a major shout out because she is all over the floor. She had 30 digs in that win over Kansas. I don't know how many she had against Butler, but that was like – before that match, I think her career high was 13 or 14, so she basically doubled her dig total for a single game. Taylor Anderson, really good. I think she's been really good. If you, I don't know what it's actually called. My fiance is a huge volleyball fan, so I should know this, but I call it like a dump set where she just goes, like, she sets it over the net to get a quick point. She's really good with her timing on that. But I think the one thing to me that's been the most I don't want to say eye-popping, but this team doesn't hit the ball as hard as it did last year. And obviously you don't have Raven Colvin, you don't have Eva Hutz, and you don't have Chloe Chacoin. That's going to play a factor in it. But where they hit the ball in terms of high-pointing it, this is the tallest team that they've had. The angles they work with and their placement on their serves seems to be a lot better than it was a season ago. Now, early on, they've also had some issues with service errors and getting out of system.
Yeah.
I think that's also the consequence of having 10 new players on your team, five or six from the transfer portal and four or five from the recruiting class. I don't remember the specific numbers, but this is going to be a team that I think gets better as the season goes along, and to get off to a 5-1 start, and we'll see what they do this weekend. They've got Houston and a top 10 SMU team over the weekend. If they can go 1-1, I think that you come out of non-conference play probably 6-2, and you're feeling pretty good with a couple matches you should win before you jump into Big Ten play.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, I thought that getting the Kansas one to me was really big, because that was a week we were talking about, and we had an episode with our friend Nate, and he was kind of previewing the season, was talking about, like, you're going to learn a lot about this team. In that stretch, because that was three straight days, and obviously you're facing two ranked opponents. With the Georgia Tech match, you know, losing that one, and then Bowling Green going to five, you're kind of like, oh man, like is this kind of going to go sideways? And then for them to turn around and be able to get Kansas, that was really big. And then then you go down to Indy, and you go to, you know, in the Shondell Bowl, and you know, you take care of Butler real quick, and now you have an opportunity again where, like you said, you can go 1-1, 6-2, and it's like, all right, that's fine, because your two losses aren't bad. They wouldn't be bad, assuming that if it was to SMU, that's not a bad loss. A loss to Georgia Tech isn't bad, at least as of right now. So yeah, it's a it's been they've been able to hold water for sure right now. And yeah, despite some of the matches where they've had like a lot of errors, they've been able to win despite that.
I want to say one quick thing too, and this is a credit to you guys. This is a credit to Purdue fans, and this is a credit to women's sports, because before we got on here, we talked probably 10 minutes about volleyball, and half of it was about Purdue, half of it was about the Texas Louisville match that we all watched apparently the other day. When I first started out at covering Purdue for Purdue on SI, I was told, yeah, maybe don't worry about volleyball. It's not going to be a heavy traffic. And for my website, it's that Purdue beating Kansas in a top 15 match or whatever, top 20 match was the fourth or fifth most viewed story I've written for the month. And that's huge. Like the other four have all been football or basketball stories. And it's a credit to the growth of women's sports. It's a credit to the job that Dave Shondell has done. And it's a credit to Purdue fans and guys like you who watch every Purdue sport that's out there. And it gives me a lot of satisfaction, because I was told this probably isn't going to be worth your time if you want to do a few stories here or there. But I've written probably 5 or 10 stories that have, you know, ranked in the top 8 or 10 for the month over the last year and a half or so. And it just gives me a lot of satisfaction to know that there are that many Purdue fans that care about volleyball, and it is worth our time to cover, because that's a really good team and they're really a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
No, and I've told them this. This is why you're kind of my go-to for Purdue stories. Is it like, and this is a credit to you, like volleyball, basketball, women's hoops, baseball, like you make sure to cover it all. So before we wrap it up, kind of just I just want to give you a chance to kind of plug where all of your stories at and kind of what we can look forward to in the upcoming weeks. Because not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but there's another sport getting ready to start up that I think some Purdue fans might be excited about.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for having me on. And you can find my stuff at si.com/college/Purdue. It's Purdue Boilermakers on SI. You can also just, if it's easier, you can go to Google and type in si.com Purdue, and it usually brings it right up. And yeah, I live in St. Louis. I can't cover everything. I do try to make it to all the men's basketball home games. I'll be at five, I think. Five of the seven football games. I'll be at a couple volleyball matches. I'll be at multiple women's basketball games this year. So you can find all my stuff. I've written, I think today or over the last 2 days, I've covered all four of those sports. When we get to the spring, I try to cover baseball and softball, but that's so frequent and they play a lot of series matches that sometimes that gets a little bit difficult, especially because it bumps up with men's and women's basketball and the transfer portal and stuff. But last year the softball tournament was at Purdue, so I was able to cover it, and they had a pretty solid run there until the quarterfinals,
Final.
semifinals, whatever it was.
Maybe semi, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I love covering. Look, I grew up around Lafayette, and went to a lot of Purdue stuff. So all I've ever wanted to do is cover Purdue sports, and I get that opportunity. So the fact that people read my site and have made it one of the higher ranked SI on SI sites is I really appreciate it, because I consider this a dream job. So my goal is to provide everybody with the best coverage I can. So yeah, I mean, I don't have anything specifically planned, but you can expect that there will be quite a few positive stories if Purdue's able to pull off the upset this weekend. Even if they play close, there's going to be a lot of positive stories from the football team coming up, and hopefully I get to write a few positive volleyball stories for a successful weekend for them too.
True. Yeah. Talking about winning is way better. Always is.
It is.
And
Yes, it's way easier too. Yeah.
cheaper. Right. Yeah, man.
Well, we really enjoyed it, man. Win or lose, we will be here to break it all down. Win or lose, you'll be there to write all the exciting recaps. I hope that I'm the only one that's right out of the three of us, because it feels like we're due for kind of a game like this. So it'd be really fun, to your point, like the fan base just kind of deserves it for kind of how well they've been backing the team. But I am in agreement with you both that regardless, I think we're going to come away. It's not going to be like the Notre Dame game last year where they just got whooped and we're like, oh shit, like maybe we're not as good as we thought. I think that they're really at least at worst case going to hold their own. And we're going to have some things to build on. And we kind of talked about like that's really what you wanted this first month was like, even if you go 2-2 in this month, do you have things to build on? And I think and my hope is that after this game that we're going to have a lot more to build on that. But Justin, man, really appreciate it. I know we said it last time and it rings true, man. Whenever you want to be back on here, we would love to have you. Just love talking sports and everything like that. And like I said, like with hoops right around the corner, man, like we would love to have you back on, man. But really just appreciate it and appreciate all you do for the team and writing and all of that.
Sports in general, yeah.
I appreciate it, guys. I'm happy to come on whenever you need me. And the one thing I'll say, kind of my last comment is I think after these first two Purdue football games, a lot of people looked at the schedule and said, if they can get to 4 wins, it'd be a successful season. The way I've seen this team play, I don't think there's any reason they can't be in that old Oak and Bucket game with 5 wins playing for bowl eligibility.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a low bar, but I think if you are competing for a postseason bid after the season you just came off of, and you have a chance to beat your rival on your home field for a chance for the postseason, I think that would be really special. So I think Purdue, the one thing I am confident in is that they will have 5 wins, go at least 5 wins heading into that game against Indiana at the end of the season.
Hope so. But we will end it there. I'm gonna have the benefit of hitting the stop recording here so you guys can't rebut this. But when Purdue wins, both you guys owe me a 4-pack of Play Hard because I'm the one guy that called the win.
Smart
And
move.
if the flip happens, you guys aren't getting any. But just really appreciate it. Again, 3:30 kick, Ross Age Stadium, Purdue USC, CBS. Can't wait to see kind of what happens. But most importantly, boiler up.
Yes, sir.